I was not told that the police did not have a warrant.
Gasped from MPs there as the Commons Speaker, Michael Martin, all but accused the police of breaking the law after they searched the parliamentary office of the Conservative MP Damian Green without an arrest warrant. Hello, I'm Nick Watt and welcome to Politics Weekly. In today's show, we'll be asking where the Speaker's statement, unprecedented in modern times, leaves the police investigation into those leaks to Damian Green. The Speaker made his statement a few hours after Her Majesty, yes, there are a few monarchists here at The Guardian, delivered her annual speech to Parliament. We'll be asking where the ragbag of parliamentary bills will help Gordon Brown win the next election. And finally, in my usual impartial way, I will preside over a discussion about the magnificent Brenda, otherwise known as Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. I will be asking the various Republican reprobates assembled around the Politics Weekly table to justify their views in the light of another stonking performance by Her Maj. Joining me to discuss these matters is The Guardian columnist Martin Kettle. Hello, Martin.
Good morning, Nick.
We have Will Woodward, The Guardian's head of politics.
Hello.
And finally, we are privileged this week to be joined by Barack Obama's best buddy in Britain. Welcome to The Guardian's political correspondent, Allegra Stratton, who is on first-name terms with the man the rest of us call the president-elect. Hello, Allegra.
Stratton to you.
Yes, yes, ma'am. Well, it was quite a day in Parliament on Wednesday, and that wasn't just because the Queen donned her crown and her NHS specs to read out the poetry that is the annual Queen's speech. We asked Simon Hoggart, The Guardian's parliamentary sketchwriter, to describe the day's events for us.
Simon Hoggart, parliamentary sketchwriter for The Guardian, reporting from the state opening of Parliament and, of course, the aftermath of the great row over the arrest of Damian Green MP. Well, what a day of bizarre contrast it was. You've got the Queen and the House of Lords looking even more bejeweled than ever under the glare of the TV lights. By golly, that's a real crown she wears. She had to sit through delivering this really terrible speech all about the strength of our financial sector is important for the future vibrancy of our economy, proposals to create savings gateway accounts. She seemed to have a bit of a cold, as many of us do at the moment, and frankly, every year she seems to lose the will to live just a little bit more as she reads out this terrible wooden clunking prose.
The bill would also introduce measures to improve the quality.
Anyway, nobody disrupted it. They wouldn't do that to the sovereign, however angry they felt about the Damian Green business, so we had to wait till after lunch. Then the Speaker made his long-awaited statement about the affair.
I wish to make a statement to the House about the arrest and entry into the offices of the Honourable Member
for... All I can say, really, is that he produced an excuse which could be described as the dog ate my arrest warrant.
I was not told that the police did not have a warrant.
The gist of it was that the police had come round and they had informed Sergeant Arms that they wanted to go into somebody's office, and they hadn't told her she could have refused them entry without a warrant, and they didn't have a warrant. That's why they went storming into Damian Green's office, seizing his computer files, and indeed went round to his home to arrest him in front of his family. Well, the Speaker announced that he was setting up an inquiry of seven senior parliamentarians who would look into everything that had happened. The senior parliamentarians will be chosen by himself, so he will be setting up an inquiry, a committee to inquire into his own behaviour, which he will himself choose, because that's the way we do things in Britain. Very, very strange. The Tories were absolutely furious still, kept baying and jeering. Not at the Speaker, at the other side. The Speaker himself seems to have got away with it, at least for the time being. Labour people, of course, have claimed to be tremendously angry about the way that the Tories have gloated in the affair, seem to rejoice in it. The point that they kept making was that no MP is above the law, that if there have been serious breaches of security from the Home Office, then that's perfectly right that an MP should be arrested if necessary, and certainly to have his office raided. The Tory line is naturally that the MP was merely doing his job. So both sides spent a great deal of time shouting at each other.
What I've explained over and over again.
David Cameron then devoted most of his response to the Queen's speech to the whole affair, and everybody had a very satisfactory time altogether. Both sides convinced that they are right, and that the inquiry will find that they're right. Meanwhile, the Speaker does seem to be off the hook for the moment.
Ms. Stratton, I'm going to turn to you first, because my police contacts tell me that on Wednesday you were spotted in the vicinity of a crime scene, otherwise known as the House of Commons. What was the atmosphere like when the Speaker made that statement?
We've had some really good moments in the Chamber recently. When the Chamber is quiet, it's really quiet. There's something about the architecture of it that really sort of soaks up sound. And quiet, it's sort of when people are listening attentively, it's sort of there is absolutely nothing can be heard. And on this occasion, people expected Michael Martin to sort of say, well, you know, to be a bland statement. And everybody was amazed that he then effectively dug a little deeper, said just how little he knew. And it was quite incredible. I think people were shocked by the sort of... It's not often that a statement is made in the House of Commons that shocks people.
Will, tell me an incredible moment Allegra says there. Was this good? The Speaker was being honest. He was saying what had happened, or rather, what hadn't happened. Or some people are saying, well, what this shows is that he and his officials just weren't asking enough searching questions.
It was a decent enough statement. It was a decent enough statement given that he was showing that he hadn't really handled it very well. He seemed to dob the sergeant at arms in it well and truly. And I think there was a sort of, you know, large degree of incompetence on his side and his team's, and as he revealed, the police's. I do think there's an awful lot of rot being talked about this week. I do not think this is a constitutional crisis. I think the sort of overblown indignation on the Tory benches is, you know, extraordinary. And I think this is a series of massive or medium-sized blunders by particularly the cops and to a degree the Commons authorities. I just make the point that had they got the warrant in the right way, to me, as far as I'm concerned, they would have behaved perfectly properly, and the search was perfectly proper. People have been citing 1642 and all the rest of it all week. This isn't that kind of crisis.
It's overblown indignation on both sides, though, isn't it? It's you know, Mandelson going on the radio and saying, I think the Tories should look a little deeper at their reasons, and the same on the part of the Tories. So, I mean, you're right, the Tories are mad.
It is utterly tribal, but where is Nigel Evans, that Tory MP who kept on popping up during Cash for Questions saying, oh, it's very exciting, there's a police investigation.
There is
none of that. It's which side are you, Labour or Tory? By and large decides your view on this.
Martin, tell me, do you think there's a lot of synthetic anger out there, or is there something genuine? Is there a genuine problem, a genuine crisis here?
Well, I think there's both. I mean, I think it is very tribal. A lot of the stuff that you heard yesterday in the chamber, I think, was deeply tribal and deeply unattractive, and I thought the Speaker's performance was absolutely lamentable. But having said that, I mean, I think this, isn't 1642. It isn't, the rule of law is not in suspension. What you have in Britain in 2008, I think, is a situation where, you know, the police have got more and more petty powers, bureaucratic powers, are not very well governed, not very well led, have become a bit of a political football. And that's all kind of gone into the mix with the incompetence of Speaker Martin and the sectarian nature of the party debate at the moment. I mean, I thought the Speaker responded as a classic Scottish Labour MP would do, total denial, pass the buck to someone else and attack the Tories. And, you know, that goes down very well with Labour MPs.
The denial will get him in trouble. They can't call for him to go because that's sort of, MPs just don't go there. But, I mean, to start, it reminds me of when the BBC editors said we hadn't heard that Gilligan broadcast. I mean, it's sort of a basic level of incompetence that translates to pretty much anybody anywhere in the country.
But do you think, Allegra, that he should or can he survive?
Well, he was anyway nearing towards the end of his... I mean, at some point in the next couple of years, there will be calls for another election for him. It will probably coincide with the general election, with a general change. I mean, I think he's sort of, what is he, 6 years in? Seven?
No, well, no, he's getting on for 10 years, 99.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
And there was anyway displeasure when he was elected because it was meant to pass to Tory hands. So, and there have been some quite incredible incidences where he sort of rebuked Cameron for doing perfectly permissible things within the House of Commons. It's unclear whether he's party pre. I don't think he's very clearly party pre, but some people do. There have been calls for him to go in the past anyway. they are not at their most vociferous at the moment.
Well, can I just ask you about the wider sort of Damien Green affair? Martin was just saying a few minutes ago that the police have lots of sort of petty powers and that they're not being well led. There's been some criticism of Jackie Smith, the Home Secretary, who says that she didn't know about the arrest of Damien Green. And the criticism there is, yes, on the one hand, you want the Home Secretary to uphold the independence of the police. But on the other hand, you don't want the police out of control. And former foreign Home Secretaries like Ken Clark and Michael Howard are saying, well, I would have kept an eye on this and I would have at least made a judgment. How do you see that argument playing out?
I think that is actually the more important constitutional question, sort of legal constitutional question of the week, is that the role of a Home Secretary is still not clarified properly in this situation. And I think it's thrown up a problem which I think has been particularly true of New Labour, but is true of all governments, that they don't devolve power so much. They sort of don't devolve it down, but they sort of devolve it away. So they say, we, the politicians, aren't going to have a role in this. And it gets shoved to an unelected, basically unaccountable official, in this case, the permanent secretary of the Home Office, Sir David Normington. I mean, I know him a bit, and he is nobody's fool. He's very much a member of the human race, and I think he has, will be seen to have behaved pretty honourably in this case. But you're right. There's this fascinating discussion on Newsnight in the week with Ken Livingstone and Michael Howard, where they were both getting themselves in all kinds of tangles about how Michael Howard saying, I would have liked to have known about these cases, and Ken saying, well, if you'd been the minister in charge during Sarah Tisdall or Clive Ponting, would you have known about those? And he was, of course not. I would have had nothing to do with those. So there seems to be a new convention in this that ministers should be told, and we criticise them if they don't know, but we don't expect them to do anything.
Right. Martin, let me just ask you, that there are sort of divisions within the cabinet over this, aren't there? There are some cabinet ministers who are saying that Jackie Smith has been a bit sort of tone deaf, and yes, absolutely right to promote the independence of the police, but that she has shown no understanding of the significance of having an MP arrested, and some longer serving members of the cabinet are saying, well, she was elected in 97. She's never been an opposition MP. She doesn't really get it. How do you see that one playing out?
Well, I think that's right. I mean, I think that the historian E.P. Thompson called the nerve of outrage about civil liberties is fairly intermittent on the Labour benches. Harriet Harman, who comes from a generation which, as you say, was in opposition and also has a civil liberties background, has, to her credit, stood outside this kind of bureaucratic consensus that you were describing. But there's a big partisan tribal tendency on the Labour side, simply to say, well, if the Home Secretary says it, she's our Home Secretary, she may be right, she may be wrong, but we just have to back her. So I think good for Harriet Harman that she hasn't done so. The accountability of the police is a complicated question, because particularly in London, where the police fulfil two roles, one of which is a state role, which is the role essentially that they're involved in this case, dealing with government, dealing with Parliament. They have to be the police have to do things in government and Parliament, but that's a state role, and also simultaneously the community role as the local police for London. And of course, these two things have always been mixed up; they've never been separated out. And this is a problem. But I think it's just inconceivable that Jackie Smith wouldn't have been told about this. So if she wasn't, it was a considerable dereliction on Normington's part, and subsequently, she I think should have said that much earlier than she did. I also think it's inconceivable that Gordon Brown, who is the most controlling Prime Minister we've ever had, didn't know either.
Well, after the drama of the Speaker's statement, the Commons eventually discussed the government's legislative programme. Gordon Brown attempted to show he's once again rising to the challenge of the recession by outlining a new plan to help people struggling with their mortgages.
Now, first, having agreed with the lenders that no repossession should be initiated in the first 3 months after the borrower has moved into arrears, I can announce that Northern Rock and Bradford and Bingley have joined the Royal Bank of Scotland in agreeing that they will not repossess homes for a full 6 months, and I urge all responsible banks to follow their example. Second, our new pre-action protocol makes it clear that repossessions should be a last resort. Judges now expect lenders to consider what steps and what flexibilities might help to keep hard-working families in their homes. We are backing this up with free debt advice in every court, and we will work to ensure that the protocol is minimising the number of repossessions ever brought to court. But today I want to offer to families worrying about their mortgages a third protection, which will be an additional guarantee of fairness for all homeowners facing difficult economic times. Hard-working households that experience a redundancy or significant loss of income as a result of the downturn will be able to defer a proportion of their interest payments for up to 2 years while they get their family finances back on track.
So, Martin, were you bowled over by that announcement, or was it a stunt to ensure that the front pages didn't have stories about Damian Green?
Well, as in answer to the previous question, I think it was both, or a bit of both. I think that it is important for government to do something about the housing situation. And, you know, I think these are significant announcements. They may not affect huge numbers of people. The people who know about these things are saying, you know, just a few thousand. But a few thousand families, it makes a lot of difference. And the general message, I think, is the important thing. It's you know, government not allowing the ship to turn over in high seas, or some image like that. It's good government, I think. Clearly, it is a stunt on one level. You know, it's an odd announcement to make. I don't like personally the way that Gordon Brown makes these announcements. Today, I can announce that. You know, I think this is all very contrived. I don't think it captures any votes very much. But I think the general message that the government is standing behind householders who are in trouble is important, and will continue to be important. And, you know, that's good politics, not bad politics.
So, Allegra, it's good politics. I'm interested.
Bad economics.
Bad
possibly.
Economics. So, tell me why it's bad economics.
As my friend Larry, or Larry Summers, would say, I mean, what you're doing
Professor
is...
Professor Summers, yeah, to the rest of us.
What happens in 2 years' time? You know, how much are you paying back? You're paying back and is there a sort of a negative incentive to go back to work? I mean, there's all sorts of... In terms of the politics...
And as Professor Summers would point out, yeah, that interest rates
so
are low now.
So deferential, Nick.
Interest rates are low now, but in two years' time, they could be a lot higher. And you've got to pay the interest that you owe plus the interest then.
I mean, in terms of the politics of it, why was it not in the PBR? Why was it not even in the Queen's speech, kind of, you know, housing elements of that? Is that a bad thing, or is that actually, thank God, they're doing politics? You know, 6 months ago, we thought this is all clunky, leaden. They don't do things like... They don't. I certainly don't think it was to debunk the Damian Green affair. I don't think that Downing Street will be thinking that much about the Damian Green affair. Maybe that's sacrilege. I don't think that they will be seeing this as how this will damage them, or this rather Damian Green affair. I think it may just be the idea that you now have to have little landmines all the way along the road for the next 6 months. You have to time things. You can't sort of, you know, give out all your presents in one go.
So, Will, Allegra's there talking about how sort of the road ahead, the next 6 months, hey, we might have an election in 6 months, it might be 18 months. What did you think generally about the Queen's speech? Because obviously Gordon Brown is not going to win the election just by being sort of Superman for saving the financial crisis. He's got to have a narrative for the future, and the Queen's speech, in a way, is the most important element because it's, hey, this is what we're doing to the country. What did you feel about what he was presenting, his narrative to the nation? Is this an election-winning formula?
It felt to me sort of incredibly one-note, punitive, gloomy. There is some social reform in there, but not the kind of social reform that, this might be a time to have done something like the ban on smoking in public places, you know, sort of... If you like, that's kind of positive punitive action, I think.
Finding happy hour.
And well, it just it isn't in the same league. And I mean, As I was sort of helping put this story together yesterday, we desperately wanted to say that Gordon was looking beyond the financial crisis. And initially we were sort of drafting words to that effect, that, you know, focus on crime and welfare. And by the end of the day, he thought, he's not really done that, has he?
He's come up with a financial idea.
Yeah, he's come up with a financial idea. The most important bill in this Queen's Speech by Amal is the banking bill. And in his peroration at the end of his bit yesterday, Gordon, it was all about negatives on the Tories. It was a lot on money, a lot on the Damien Green affair, and a bit on how the Tories had got the economic crisis wrong, and bugger all about the future, I felt.
We've had bugger all on Politics Weekly. I suppose it's just the Today programme. We'd have to have a moment's silence whilst we recover from that.
Damned if you don't. I mean, if he'd have done a kind of fireworks Queen's speech, then, or rather, if the Queen had read out on his behalf a fireworks Queen's speech, then it would have been distracting, and the Tories would have said, your eyes are not on the job. And now he's done this slimmed down one. He's criticised, but the slimmed downness of it will be, I imagine, as they say in our profession, one news cycle.
Queen's speech is for life, not just for
Christmas. You know,
they're supposed to last.
Bugger all, damned all. Can we have some proper English from you, Martin Kettle, please?
Yes, in the
raise the standards.
You know, 400th anniversary of the birth of Milton. I think I'll try to elevate things.
Is it really today?
No, next week, Tuesday.
He must be so depressed.
I think it's really important to point out that, last Queen's speech, there were 29 pieces of legislation. Yeah. This one, there are 13, 14, depending on how you count it. That tells me two things. The first is that Gordon Brown has absolutely got the possibility of an early election very much in his head. It's definitely a possibility. I'm not saying it's going to be one, but it's definitely a possibility. And the second thing is, I think he has no narrative beyond his handling of the economic crisis. And I think the absence of reform measures, anything much in the health, education, personal social services field, I think does rather indicate that. I think he desperately needs a narrative. And I was very interested this week to listen to Peter Mandelson's Hugo Young lecture, yes, which I think provides him with a narrative if he wants to take it. But I think that's a very open question as to whether he really is, which is that it is a new Labour narrative. And I think Brown is winging it at the moment between a new Labour narrative and an old Labour narrative. Jackie Ashley said this week in The Guardian and on Comment is Free that this was a Queen's speech which gave great delight to old Labour. That's Gordon Brown's great political danger, is that he may be doing the right things, but in the end he's retrenching as, the leader of a party that can't win a general election.
But Martin, what is a new Labour narrative? Because essentially what New Labour's done over the last 10 years is chuck loads of money into public services, tax us at a reasonably high level. That's not sustainable anymore. So what is a new Labour narrative?
Well, I think the new Labour narrative, as enunciated by Mandelson in the Hugo Young lecture this week, is one which emphasises that this is temporary.
Financial crisis is temporary.
Yes, and the measures to take it are temporary measures. That basically there's a confession in there, as there certainly should be, in my opinion, that New Labour 1997 version did not address the question of the role of the state in managing markets. It just let everything go. The Brown boom was the product of that. Brown and Blair both. As responsible for that as anyone else, and Mandelson, indeed. What Mandelson is now saying, it seems to me, is that there is a role for the state, but we mustn't exaggerate it. It mustn't become the default role of left of centre politics to solve everything and centralise everything through the state. You can pick holes in what Mandelson was saying, but I thought it was a really interesting speech that well deserves to be pored over and talked about, because I think it is a kind of prescription for how Labour could get out of what is still a really big political crisis.
OK, well, we will all go and study the works of the noble lord.
You've done it already, Nick.
I have indeed, haven't I, over many years. Well, the Queen's speech marks a particularly moving moment for those of us who have a special place in our hearts for Brenda. Pray silence for Her Majesty.
My government's overriding priority is to ensure the stability of the British economy during the global economic downturn.
Martin Kettle, as the longest-serving Guardian journalist on the panel, I ask you a simple question. How can you not think the Queen is anything other than our greatest national treasure?
Well,
pausing to show respect to Brenda at this point.
Well, I think most people, if pressed, would say that, and I think that's a fact. This isn't a Republican country, and in the 400th anniversary of the birth of Milton, that is an unfortunate thing. One of our great Republican writers. There we are. She is the Queen. She does this job. She does it well. People respect her. No, not many people think this is the issue of the day. I certainly don't think it's the issue of the day. One thing I would say about the Queen's speech, since you give me the opportunity to speak on this subject at this moment, is I think that the Queen's speech, the state opening of Parliament, is a missed opportunity for civil society. We can have all the ceremony and all the Queen role, all of that stuff, in the morning. What we should then have, I think, is a proper televised evening prime time State of the Nation speech by the Prime Minister, replied to by the two main opposition party leaders, to kind of say, well, you know, this is where we are. This is why what we do matters. Instead, you know, it's just business as usual. They, you know, it's all the knockabout. They just abuse each other wittily. I mean, it was good parliamentary stuff yesterday in the debate on the Queen's speech. But I think we miss an opportunity here at a time when politics is not held in high regard to do it better. And you know, I don't know why Gordon Brown hasn't done it, because you know, he at one point was quite keen on doing these sorts of things. He's got other things on his mind now, unfortunately. But you know, one of these days, I think it would be a thing to do, to have a state opening and a State of the Nation debate afterwards.
So Will, Martin there says we need a blast of US-style politics, but Martin is still giving a role to Brenda. Can you justify how you can think she should be thrown off the throne?
No, I'm sorry, I'm incredibly grumpy today, but I just think, you know, it is utterly ludicrous that in the 21st century we should continue to pay deference and guarantee untold riches to someone simply by virtue of their birth. Viva the Republic, viva President Gary Lineker. Bring it on.
Yeah, President Gary Lineker.
She did read out this sentence, because of course the Queen's speech was set within this rubric of fairness, and she does read out, you know, my government will ensure, you know, fair chances for all, no matter where they're born or whatever, you know. And irony was not lost, probably even on her.
She does.
But we're all Elizabeths. We're not monarchists, you know. I mean, she has injected into that role untold stature.
No, she has.
But the thing is, will she, like New Labour? I mean, will it survive her? Will it survive her? You know, Prince Charles, Prince William, and their kind of Club H, and etc.
Yet again, we're in danger of playing the man. We'll decide we don't like Charles. So then the sort of calls for the Republic would create. When we have a Queen who we can moderately tolerate is precisely the point we should be arguing strongly for a Republic.
I think it's very funny that people of our political persuasion often say, oh, if only this country was more like Sweden. And, you know, there you have a country which has a monarchy. It's not a big deal, and it gets on with it. The monarchy does the kind of routine stuff. It meets the other heads of state and, you know, opens hospitals, and that's fine. But they also have an excellent social democracy and lots of accountability and highly developed communal values, and it's a very free country in lots of ways, and I don't see the problem.
So there we are. The Guardian backs a bicycling monarchy. Thank you for that. That's it from this week's edition of Politics Weekly. Thanks to all my guests, the Guardian columnist Martin Kettle, the Guardian's head of politics Will Woodward, and Barack Obama's top British chum Allegra Stratton. Politics Weekly was produced by Francesca Panetta. I'm Nick Watt. Join us again next week. Till then, goodbye.